Welcome to minute 42 of season 12 of Mover, a Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back once again, Heather.
Hello, I am so happy to be here, as always.
Yes, I'm glad to have you back. It's always fun to have you back. So minute 42 begins with Andy continuing to carve his name and ends with Andy leaning in towards Red. So we left things off yesterday with Andy beginning to, deface state property by basically trying to carve his name in the wall. And so today we continue with that, and we see that.
Yeah, it's not, it's not murder, but it's still crime.
That's right. So today he continues with putting the A in and completes the A. So we know that Andy has an education because he's able to write out an A. That works, doesn't it?
Yes, we do. Also, it gives me flashbacks to Toy Story and Andy carving his name into Woody's foot.
Yeah, but there he puts the N backwards.
So, which I hadn't literally thought about until this second, so.
Right. I didn't think about that either. But there the N is backwards.
That's true. So. Of course, he is a child.
That's true. Well, there's always the inner child in all of us. Even Andy Dufresne has an inner child inside somewhere, I think. But his inner child is playing with like the play school. Cash register. That's what he's playing with. Did you have that as a kid? The play school cash register.
What is that?
It's like a fake cash register.
Oh yes, yes. Yeah. Why was that so cool?
Exactly. But I'm saying Andy
with coins and you could go buy stuff. It felt very cool.
And it would ding.
That's, you're right. He was a banker. It's right up his alley.
That's right.
That's the best part, though.
That is true.
Fisher Price had the coolest stuff when we were kids.
Oh, that's right. Was it Fisher Price? All right. Okay. It was Fisher Price, not play school. But it could be.
I think it was Fisher Price.
Yeah, no. That makes 100% sense.
It could have been play school. But I think if.
Right. Okay. So in the scene changes and we now see a black and white movie on the screen. And so do you know what movie this is?
I don't know the name of the movie. I did, but my brain just went blank. I know that Rita Hayworth's character is Gilda.
That's right. And that is the name of the movie too. It's called Gilda.
Oh, okay. I've never seen it.
It's a pretty
iconic. Never seen it. Have you?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's a pretty good movie.
Of course you have.
Well, you found a movie yesterday that I've never seen.
So,
it does happen.
This is true. It does on occasion. So it's a good movie. Yes, it's iconic. And you've read the novella, Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption.
That's right.
So is this how I've inferred my own interpretation of why it's relevant to this film. Do you have a specific reason why it's so important
to the film or to the novella? Because the novella, it's just, Rita Hayworth was popular at the time and he asked for a poster of Rita Hayworth. That's all it came down to. What they show us here.
Okay, so there was no bigger connection than that.
The bigger connection here is that we get to see a picture of, we get to see them watching the movie.
Yeah.
And as you talked about the Green Mile yesterday, Darabont loves putting his flicker pics on the screen. So we get to see different movies. So, yeah.
I thought that I've been watching this movie this time specifically with, with all of my eyes paying attention. And I feel like this is also doing double work as just not just being the movie that they're watching right now, but how it impacts so many different things. Some things in the immediate future, which we'll get to in a couple later in the week, but also long term, how it foreshadows, which you will get through with other guests. But I do think it's doing double work in that way. And I think the next scene, the next minute is where it really kind of becomes more apparent. But there is something I think that connects Rita Hayworth's character and also Andy, that there is kind of a parallel to it, at least from this scene anyway. This is she's caught and she's stuck and she's trapped essentially in this scenario. But she's trapped between two men. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but she's trapped between two men. Andy's trapped in prison, and both of them don't know how to get out and manipulate the situation or escape, so to speak, from the situation and scenario that they're in. And neither are by choice. Perhaps I'm reading too much into it, but that was how I kind of read the moment here.
Interesting. That's a very interesting way to look at that. And I never thought about it from that perspective. And I have seen the movie.
I just know, like I said, I know that there was the love triangle essentially, and she doesn't want to be in it. That was all I got. And she was, a femme fatale. That's all I got. So I was
Okay. All right. The
really,
only
really grasping there. But I was just
No.
curious if there was more, because after watching, it certainly seems like everything is very, very intentional.
Yes, 100%. Now, so the movie, IMDb's synopsis is: a small-time gambler hired to work in a Buenos Aires casino discovers his employee's new wife is his former lover. Again, it sounds very Casablanca-ish, the way that story goes on. And then we get to watch a little bit of what happens on screen. And we see a character come in and say, "Where's the canary? How'd you know? How'd I know what? So you don't know? Come on, this is where the canary is, Johnny." And then we hear a woman singing in the background. And then he goes, "Quite surprised to hear a woman singing in my house, hey, Johnny." And as we're watching the screen, we get to see also what's going on in this I guess makeshift movie theater. That the characters are sitting in. Now, one thing I wanted to mention, the main character besides Rita Hayworth in Gilda is Glenn Ford, who I always loved Glenn Ford, not just because he was Superman's father in the original Superman movie, but he was in a lot of great I guess small thrillers or short thrillers in the 50s. And many of them were remade. Are you familiar with the Mel Gibson movie from 1996, I think, called Ransom?
Yes, I like that movie. I think
Okay.
Rene Russo was in that
Yeah,
too.
it is.
Maybe
It
not
is.
Rene Russo.
Yeah, it's
Maybe
with
Rene
Rene
Russo.
Russo. Yeah. And that movie was a
And
remake.
Gary Sinise, right?
And it was a remake of the movie Ransom from 1956, starring Glenn Ford.
I don't know, but you made me want to rewatch Ransom because I haven't seen it since it came out and I remember
Oh,
liking it.
I love
I
Ransom.
think I
And
saw it in the theater with my mom. I think I saw it in the theater with my mom and maybe my brother.
I actually saw it on a date the first time. That I remember.
Really? That's a
Uh,
good date movie.
yeah,
Thrillers are.
yeah, it was. The thing was, I realized at a certain point that going to movies on dates was not a good thing because I enjoyed the movies more than I enjoyed the date. I stopped taking girls to movies on dates, unless
It's
it's
a
really, unless,
really good filter though,
yeah,
if they like bad movies.
well, no, the thing was, is there were times when there was someone that I was going on another date with, and I decided I didn't want to really go out with them another time, so I would choose specifically to go to a movie. This way I didn't have to talk to them. I would at least enjoy myself watching the movie. And, you know, then afterwards you can say, oh, well, you know, that was it. I remember I saw the Disney movie Tarzan on a date because I didn't want to, I didn't really want to be on that date. Whatever. Fun
That's
facts of
so
history.
funny.
That's right. He was also in the original 310 to Yuma. That was remade with Will Smith.
Oh, that is one of my, I've never seen the original. That is one of my favorite. I'm not a big Western fan, as we've discussed, but I've grown to appreciate them a lot more now that I've gotten older. And that is, and was when I was like Westerns, that movie. Oh, it's so good. Ben Foster is so good in it. He's such a wicked, wicked man. And Russell Crowe and Christian Bale are so good. Oh, it's such a good movie. I want to go watch it right now. I love it. Love it. Is the original better or just as good or not so
It,
much?
again, it's from 1957, so it's obviously a little different than what you would expect. You know, it's not a shoot 'em up Western for like you would see in 2007, but it is. I really enjoyed it because it's very cerebral about what the character needs to do and stuff like that. And he plays the Christian Bale character.
All right.
So I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
I like that. There's another movie that he was in that I loved. He was also in the Courtship of Eddie's Father. He played Eddie's father in the original Courtship of Eddie's Father. Which is all about a widower with a son who's trying to deal with life. You know, that type of
Oh,
thing. Yeah.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah. Again,
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of Glenn Ford.
I'll be watching the original 310 for sure.
Yeah, sure. I know you.
Yeah.
We'll be talking in a year
One
and a half.
day, one day. It'll be 10 years from now, but I will see it eventually.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Right. So we have all these scenes from Gilda, and as the movie is playing, it quickly goes to the background. Actually, you know what? I wanted to jump trace back just a second. He actually plays the Russell Crowe character. He doesn't play
Oh, okay.
the Christian Bale character. Which again.
Christian Bale character, yeah.
Which is interesting because I again he's better as a you know as not the bad guy but sometimes he plays the bad guy really well and this is a good example you know where he does
That's nice too, because yeah. Especially back in the day, there was a lot more typecasting that happened. You didn't see actors that played the bad guy all the time playing the good guy. And you didn't see the guys that played the good guy all the time playing the bad guy as often as you do
That's
now.
right. And so the Christian Bale
So that's
character,
kind of cool,
right?
actually.
The Christian Bale character was played by Van Heflin, who was also a
Okay.
great actor at the time. Yeah. So at this point, you know, the we it, they do a great transition of us watching the movie on the screen in front of us into moving
Yeah.
into the makeshift theater itself and seeing, you know, Red and his posse all just sitting there watching this movie. Which is great. They're all
I was just talking, yeah, I was just talking about how this kind of invites the audience. I was how Tarantino actually does this a lot. Invites the audience to kind of join the characters by making the music play on the radio, or like this is a perfect example of the characters watching the movie, but you were also watching the movie right before. It's a way to kind of, I think, enmesh the viewer with the characters in the film. It's really, really clever, and I like it. And even when I was watching it this time, I was like, oh, there we are.
That's right.
It's just cool.
Yeah, they do it really well
Oh, and
because obviously the movie keeps playing as we're watching these guys you know watch this movie. Then we hear in the background that's quite a surprise. And then Andy you know hunches over not to interrupt other people as he's you know excuse me pardon me you know trying to get through you know into the to try and get to Red, who's on, who obviously is on the other side. Obviously he's not gonna be sitting on the aisle. And it's great that there's a seat open right behind Red. That's the perfect place for Andy to have a seat. I like
super convenient.
That's right. And it's very interesting that this is the type of movie they're showing these guys in prison.
Yes. That's what I was thinking earlier when I said this is kind of like a build up to what follows.
That's right.
I mean, Rita Hayworth is one of the most beautiful women that's ever existed, as far as I'm concerned. She is gorgeous. Gorgeous. And in this timeline, I mean, what do we refer to women as in this timeline? Like sex kittens, like Anne Margaret? I mean, is there a name for them? Bombshells? That's kind of what she was. So there is a certain level of this movie being sexually charged in that way.
Right.
To a bunch of men who are surrounded by other men and have no potential possibility of being with a woman again. It doesn't seem like the best idea.
Right. And as we're going to find out soon, they play this movie over and over. It's not as if this is like a one-time thing. Or maybe this is a way of Norton to be able to torture the men.
Maybe it is a bit sadistic. It does feel that way. That was my like I said, really thinking about and asking myself why all these things existed here. This was one that I was like, oh, this is not the best idea, is it? No, I think you might be right. He did it on purpose.
Again, it would make sense. Based on what we know of the warden, I think he would be willing to do this type of things, just torture the men a little bit.
Yeah. Any way that he can exude his power. That guy's a nasty, nasty bad man.
Right, but
totally up his sleeve, okay, I believe it.
On the one hand, if he's trying to make these guys get pent up frustration, he also knows that in prison, as we will talk about later this week, there are some men that will find a way to get rid of that pent up frustration.
Yes, which is what my initial concern was. But if you're right, and he did it intentionally to create that, it's better for them if the prisoners are at odds with each other rather than with the guards. It's better for them if the prisoners are fighting with one another rather than looking at their overlords. And that's kind of what ends up happening, is the results of them taking it out on each other rather than the guards. And them also, that's another thing they don't want to happen in prison. They don't want all of the prisoners to become buddies. They don't want them to get together and think about a way to overthrow them. There's guards, sure, but there's less guards than there are people. And if there are more people, sure, some might die, but you see riots in prisons and stuff like that all the time. So it's totally viable. It actually makes more sense now that we're breaking it down.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. So I actually looked up about whether they really showed movies in prisons back in 1949. And the truth is they did. And they'd have them sometimes on the weekends, or sometimes it would be an evening recreation. And they were used in order to try to rehabilitate the prisoners, and also as a reward. For people that were on good behavior, I guess, type of thing. And it was a way for them to keep the inmates occupied, so that they wouldn't, as you said, they wouldn't think about how am I going to get back at the guards, or how am I going to try and escape, or whatever it is. They're like, hey, let's watch a movie with a sexy woman in them. Maybe, that could be part of the whole idea. They would also show educational content besides popular Hollywood studio releases. They would basically transform, whether it's mess halls or auditoriums, or sometimes a large cell block, into makeshift movie theaters. And they would put in projectors, and you know, they would allow the prisoners who were behaving well to sit together and watch movies under supervision of the guards, that type of thing.
Yeah, incentive.
Yeah.
Again, it works on multiple levels.
Right. And it's a way also to give them you know, a brief escape from the type of life that they're currently stuck in, I guess you can say.
Yes, which insert Andy in his request.
And most of the time they would not show films that had crime or violence in them for obvious reasons. Let's not give them ideas.
Let's definitely not show them any Prison Break movies.
Correct. But again, they are still showing them you know, films with lots of with a sexy woman in it. Put it that way. Let's put it
Yes.
that way. And
Yes.
then Andy interrupts Red and goes, "Red," and Red turns to him and tries to shush him and goes, "Wait, wait, 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 wait. Here she comes. Is this the part I like when she does that with her hair?" And Andy goes, "Yeah, I know. I've seen it 3 times this month." Then we're back on the
It
screen.
is a great hair flip.
Yes. Then we're back on the screen and we hear, "Gilda, are you decent?" And then we see Rita Hayworth tossing her hair, and she looks up at the screen and goes, "Me?" And the men just go nuts. They're all cheering and hollering and howling, and they're loving it. And Red goes, "Ha, oh, God, I love it." And you can see Andy smiling also. You know, which I like the
Yeah, and it seems very sincere.
that's right. And I like the fact that they show us Andy smiling because it sort of shows us that Andy has somewhat softened up in the, you know, in the 2 years that he's been there. He's not a he's not as cold and unemotional as he was beforehand. And then we hear a lot of
Yeah, there's definitely been acceptance.
And then we hear a lot of cheering and whistling, and Andy starts to lean in towards Red to say something, and that's where this minute gets cut off. So, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
No, I think we covered it pretty well.
All right. So,
We have incoming, though,
yes.
tomorrow.
Yes, that we do. So, today's segment is called Talking Tuesday, where my guest will give their top five movies featuring narration. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, this was hard because it's hard because there's a lot of really good ones. A lot of really good ones. And then there were some that kept popping up after I'd already made my list yesterday. So I had to shorten it. And I just went with instinctually what was my favorite and the ones that I thought of first. So my number five is The Princess Bride. I love it because, well, nostalgia, but we're talking about movies that are perfect movies. This is another one that feels that way to me. It's endlessly entertaining and wonderful. And I love the interruptions, especially when I was a kid. I don't know, it made me feel like I was a part of it. There was just something very magical and special about that movie, right? I don't know. It's great. So my number four is about as far-fetched from that as you can get, and it's A Clockwork Orange. It was either that or it was going to be American Psycho. I had to do at least one of my sociopathic psychopath narrations. And actually, my number three is exactly that too. Actually, all of these are bad guys. From here on out, they're all bad guys. My number three is The Usual Suspects. I think this is probably one of the best examples of an intentionally unreliable narrator and still one of the best twist endings of all time, even though everybody kind of knows it now. Number two is once again another really good twist ending, but fantastic, perfect movie as far as I'm concerned, and that's Fight Club. We actually have the narrator is just titled The Narrator. And my number one is also one of my favorite movies of all time, and we kind of talked about it at the beginning of the episode a little bit. And it has one of my favorite introduction lines to a movie ever. As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. It's Goodfellas. It's so good. I love that movie endlessly, endlessly. So yeah, Martin Scorsese doing his gangster movies, which, you know, we don't have gangster movies anymore, and that's okay.
Right.
But I love it. So those are my five.
Okay. That's a great list. That's great. Nicely done. All right.
Thank you.
And now we will play the first of two games. So today we're going to play high-low first. So we're going to spin the wheel and see what you get.
No whammies. Big money, big money. I think that's Wheel of Fortune.
All right. The 2010 film, 127 Hours.
Okay. This is the IMDb one?
Yes.
And Rotten Tomatoes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. IMDb, I'm going to say 8.3. And Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to say 89% fresh.
All right. Well, it is 7.5 on IMDb and 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. So far, you've gotten three out of the four movies that you've had from yesterday and today have 93, and the fourth was 92. So you're, you know, I'm not going to give you advice because I don't know what the
That's
next
crazy.
One, I don't know what the next one's going to be. But you know, I would say you should probably try to go to the 93 range. But it could be completely wrong.
Yes, it feels excessive. It feels like that doesn't happen that often, but apparently it does. So.
Apparently. All right, let's spin the wheel for the next one. And let's see if it's 93%.
It does. Like, what are the chances? At least I was a little closer that time. And this one, too, I can at least guess with no knowledge.
Okay, first of all, I will let you know it is not 93%, okay? So don't try to use it, okay?
Okay.
It's the 2011 film Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Oh. Okay, I'm going to say that one is a 7.6 IMDb. And I'm going to say 84% fresh.
Okay, well, the 84% you probably have to half because it's 45.
Holy shite!
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that went in the other direction. I was trying to be more generous here because they were feeling so generous.
And IMDb is a 6.9.
Okay. Well, I accept.
I think this is one of the lowest that we've had so far. 45. Wow.
Yeah.
I actually like that movie. I thought it was really good.
I haven't watched it since it came out, but I did too. I never felt like revisiting it, but I enjoyed it enough to go C plus, B minus at least.
Nah, I wouldn't go that
45. Wow. All
right. Let's
No, that's mean.
All right, let's spin the wheel. There are ones that are under 45. I just saw one on the list that's 33. Okay. So, you know, it does happen.
Wow.
Okay. All right, let's spin the wheel for you.
Definitely opposite direction of 93.
Yeah.
No whammies. No whammies.
The 1990 Oscar winner, Dances with Wolves.
Oh, I'm afraid to rewatch this. I watched it so much when I was a kid. I was obsessed with this movie. Like, I had no right to love this movie as much as I did, and I feel like it probably hasn't aged well. All right, I'm going to say this one is a 9.0 on IMDb. That's probably wrong. This is my youthful bias because I haven't watched it since I was probably about 20 years old. And Rotten Tomatoes, I would say 75%.
All right. So the answer is
Once again, I'm thinking Rotten Tomatoes is going to be
it is
meaner.
an 8.0 on IMDb, and it is an
That's fair.
83% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Once again, opposite directions. All right. I need to be meaner on IMDb and I need to be more generous on Rotten Tomatoes mostly.
Yeah. Okay, well,
I'm trying to
you have
strategize.
tomorrow to try that, and Thursday and Friday, so you have time to do that.
Yes.
So that's fine. All right, that's
Strategy.
right. And now we will play the other daily game of name that novel adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 1958, and the original novel is French, but the translation is From the Dead.
Nineteen 58. Oh, I'm gonna suck. From the Dead. All I could think of is horror stuff. This is awful. Merde. I have no idea. I don't even have a guess. I just keep thinking of like Night of the Living Dead and zombie
No, but this
movies,
was in the 60s, not
which
1958.
is
So,
I know. That's like 70s and
okay,
80s. I know I'm
this is
wrong.
a movie that is direct was directed by Hitchcock.
Oh, that changes things.
I knew that it would.
Frig. Come on, brain. You've seen a lot of Hitchcock movies. Do your job.
You want to know who?
My mom loved Hitchcock, so I would.
Do you want to know the name of
Yeah, give me another hint,
the name of
please.
the lead actor?
Yes,
The name of the
please.
lead actor is Jimmy Stewart.
Rear Window.
That was not 1958.
Yes, that was the first one I thought of. What the frig else? No, that was Rock Hudson. That was not. Nope. Vertigo. It's wrong.
No, it is right. You got it. Vertigo.
Was the first Hitchcock movie I ever saw, and I never watched it again after. I liked it. I just never rewatched it afterwards. I watched Rear Window was my
Because you would
favorite.
get dizzy watching it, wouldn't you?
Yes, I have vertigo now. It's not pleasant.
Ah.
Aging is just rude, by the way.
Got it. All right. So, Heather, would you like to tell people where they can find Heather Baxendale?
You can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find all my goodies there. You can find my books. You can find my podcast, Word of Hellmouth. It is a Buffy rewatch show that I do with my friend Mark. We break down every episode and talk about how we felt about it when we were teenagers and watched it for the first time, and now how we see it as adults. We are on season four of Buffy and season one of Angel. You can also find all of my social media on there. Follow me at your own
All
risk.
right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Grab Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, MovieGrabMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieGrabMinute@MovieGrab.net. So, until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.